And welcome back to the SEC on CBS podcast here on CBS Sports. I am your host, Chip Patterson. Gary Danielson sits down as we preview a big SEC on CBS doubleheader. It's Arkansas and Missouri on Friday, the day after Thanksgiving. It's the Iron Bowl, Auburn at Alabama on Saturday. We break both these games down. Gary will be on the call for both with Brad Nessler on Friday, Vern Lundquist on Saturday. A big weekend, and we also look elsewhere, LSU, Texas A&M. It's all on the docket. Make sure that you're subscribed so that you can get the SEC on CBS podcast first, and enjoy Gary Danielson. Back here on the SEC on CBS podcast, it is rivalry week, and that means we have a whole big, fun slate of games to break down with Gary Danielson. Gary, thank you so much for joining me. Do you get the jitters? I mean, we're down to just there is the Army-Navy game.
Yep.
You know, and we've got the SEC has the championship game on CBS in that wonderful 4 o'clock slot. But this is the last one in the regular weekly grind. Do you feel as though it is that time of year? Has it caught up on you yet?
Yes, I think so. You know, I got a great opportunity this week. I'm doing both games, Friday and Saturday.
So awesome.
It's a lot of fun. You know, Brad and I are going to be doing our first game together since 1999. So that's something to look forward to. I always like to do a Brett Bielema game. He's fun to visit with. And, you know, Arkansas really wants – they're really excited to finish this thing up on an upswing. They really feel – that they're one of the better teams in the league. They just didn't win some close games, and they want to prove it.
I am excited. I did not know about that. What do you remember? What the last game that you called with Brad Nessler was?
No, I thought you might ask that. The truth, it was early in the season in 1999. I remember it distinctly because halfway through the season, they mixed up the groups, and I went with Brett Musburger, and Bob Greasy went with Brad, and. That was the year Brett and I ended up doing the national championship game between Virginia Tech and Florida State and with Michael Vick. That was such a fun game to do.
That was an amazing college football game.
It was an amazing game. Yeah, it was.
All right, so if you would like a preview of what the 2017 SEC on CBS booth will sound like, tune in to Arkansas at Missouri. You just got a chance to see Missouri. And Arkansas,
right,
coming out of the Mississippi State game, you know, I was sitting down to make my picks and my selections and my analysis, and I said they're both coming out of Big 12-style shootouts. Do you think that Missouri, with its pace, will bring another – high scoring, maybe another big performance for Raleigh Williams coming off 205 yards and four touchdowns? Do you think it'll be a ping pong match kind of like last week?
I really have no idea. I do say this. I've been doing this, you know, since 1991, and I have never done a game where both teams enter the game coming off of a game where they were involved with 100 points scored in each of the two games that were played. So, you know, Missouri, Tennessee, and Arkansas, Mississippi State games are, as you say, Big 12 games.
Yeah.
And really it has changed. You know, I actually thought this might happen when Texas A&M and Missouri entered the league. And then when Hugh Freeze went to Ole Miss, it really started it down that way. The league has changed a lot, and these two teams were kind of the beginning of the new football. But I find it very interesting that the two coaches, Barry Odom and Brett Bielema, you know, got into this football, made their mark as defensive coordinators, got their head coaching jobs. And I go, ask Barry today when I interviewed him, I go, how do you do this? How do you stand on the sideline and watch this? And he goes, well, you know, it's a new game and you have to adjust with the times. But I think it's like watching 20-18 baseball. I think it's just swung too far right now.
What about in this particular matchup? I would say this Arkansas defense, neither of these defenses has received particularly high grades from me for their SEC play this season. Which one do you think maybe has, is this a Brooks Ellis 18-19 tackle, go out with a bang kind of performance for leading the way for Arkansas? Is Charles Harris making the difference? Can you see either defense slowing the other one, or do you think that this is going to come down to who can maybe avoid mistakes? Drew Locke at the quarterback position, Austin Allen.
It usually that way nowadays, Chip, with the modern football now, especially with the way that Missouri is playing it, with when they try to push fast football anytime they can. And your quarterback has to play as clean a game as possible. And Drew Lock had a really nice game, going against Tennessee. He makes one mistake. It ends up being a bad interception down to, 8-10 yard line. And all of a sudden it's like a tennis match. Since that defense, held serve and or broke serve, pardon me, all of a sudden it can tip very quickly. And, a game can get out of hand very quickly. There's a lot of pressure on the quarterbacks. We saw it with Chad Kelly. We saw it with Trevor Knight early in the year. And now Drew Lock is feeling that. He's got to produce almost every time. The rush defense for Missouri, because of all the injuries at tackle, it's just tough for them to stop people. So they'll have their hands cut out for themselves, especially with the fact that they're going to lose DeMarie Crockett now, their outstanding running back who's being suspended for possession of marijuana. So this will be a tough chore for this Missouri team. They're getting better at a lot of positions. I'll give you one fact that I've never heard before.
Okay.
And I don't think it'll ever happen again. The Missouri offensive line played 5 players, not one substituted play. They each played 110 snaps.
Ah!
550 snaps. I was kidding Josh Heupel that it's, late Tuesday afternoon and he's still not done grading the tape.
Well, also, what about now they're turning around on one day less rest going into, now, to be fair, this is a team that is 3-8. This is their last game.
And there's another factor here is they get a little tired, but it is not a physical style. It's not like those offensive linemen are pounding and grounding and rooting out, isolation plays. So perhaps, I could say maybe on the positive, but I know I'll never do another game where, the all-time record for plays is 115, and this team put 110 up, and they did not have one substitution the whole game.
Listen, there is a psychological impact of anxiety from even knowing that Derek Barnett is across the line of scrimmage for 110 snaps. I mean, goodness. You know what I'm saying.
It's a weird type of football. I have to admit that. I think the rules have swung and the pendulum has swung too far. I think it's actually had an impact on the whole SEC, and I don't really want to get into that right now unless you want to, but I really think it is one of the reasons why the whole conference is down a bit. This fast football has really taken the edge that the SEC had with their big, strong offensive and defensive lines and nullified it a bit.
Well, there is a program that you will see on Saturday that while it has incorporated up-tempo at times and while it has used no huddle in order to keep its opponents...
They play smash mouth football.
They play...
Ask Alabama in 2014, and I know you're talking about the Buckeyes.
Yeah. All right, so the Alabama Crimson Tide, you have spoken often, and I have taken note and spread this as a word of wisdom when giving analysis about the Crimson Tide, because I think it's great. Nick Saban understands the flow of a season. He understands what he wants to see at different times, get them peaking at the right time. Coming off of a Chattanooga performance, which maybe gave him some teaching moments, what are you expecting? Where do you think this Crimson Tide team is in the term of being in that flow of trying to make sure they're playing their best football in the SEC championship game and in the playoff?
Well, I think you're right. First of all, like a good card player, if you give a good card player good cards, he's even tougher to beat. So, Nick Saban has gotten to be a good card player, but he's getting better and better cards every year. And this team is stacked at so many different positions and so many explosive ways to beat you. And Nick never lets up on him, and the competition within the program to get snaps on the field has really made it them so much more dynamic. In fact, it's becoming now, when Alabama goes on the recruiting trail, they have convinced so many of these players that it's your advantage to come to Alabama because we play almost everyone. We'll go 2 and 3 deep in the key positions of linebacker, off defensive line, corner, receiver. You'll get a chance to play. And you'll get the advantage of not getting double teamed. You know, it's a lot different playing defensive end for Alabama than it is playing the position at Tennessee for Derek Barnett, who gets chipped and to a tight end over him. You can't do that to Alabama. So you have the ability to show your skills more. And, you know, people are knocking down the door to get there to play at Alabama right now. But the major question you asked was, yes, Nick has gotten better at knowing when to, maybe not to the public, but know how to let off the gas a bit, know how to really gun it when he needs to, know how to call them out, know how to applaud them when the critics. I remember distinctly last season when everybody was questioning that Alabama almost only beat Arkansas 14-13, and Nick goes, "What are you talking about? That's a great team, a great win. I'm thrilled for my team." He seems to be able to try to level his team out if they need building up. He senses it, and then he senses it when they get a bit cocky. You know that he loved the fact. Remember the movie The Dirty Dozen?
Oh, yes.
When Lee Marvin sees his group, and they rebel a bit against him, and they walk back in, and he goes, "Oh, this is great. I got exactly what I want. They're all mad at me now." That's what Nick got with that game for Chattanooga. He didn't get a blowout. He got a team that'll go hungry into this game against Auburn.
Is Jonathan Allen Jim Brown in this situation?
He's the one that just kind of lays back and waits to make the big run or sack. You're right. I think that's the perfect typecasting.
What are we looking at with the Auburn Tigers? Now, Sean White is banged up. Cameron Petway banged up. Gus Malzahn tells us, he said to the reporters, he's, quote, hopeful that Sean White will play, but there's a plan if White can play. If not, maybe Jeremy Johnson, Jonathan Franklin continuing to make contributions. Where are the wins? Where is the goal or the realistic hope if you're an Auburn fan going into a game where you just realize the Tigers are maybe not as competitive of a matchup for the Tide as maybe we thought even just a few weeks ago?
Well, that's a good question. And, you know, you never want to kind of downcast, you know, or try to look at the weaknesses of a team in any one particular game. But it is a bit alarming that, you know, the quarterback play has been such a level that they, you know, do they have enough? Because when Auburn really did knock off Alabama, you know, was Nick Marshall having a big game or was Cam Newton in the second half having a big game throwing the ball? So the question is there enough at that quarterback position? I think that's number one. Now, the things that Auburn will bank on is that their defense and offensive line is going to be maybe as a unit, both on offense and defense combination, the best that Alabama has seen this year. I get it. LSU's defensive front seven and you know, probably was up to that level, but I don't think the offense defensive line quite compares to way Auburn, when they're running their groups, kind of matches up. So I look at it this way, a little bit the way Chattanooga talked about their game against Alabama. The plan was make small goals. Try to get two or three first downs every quarter. Try not to let Alabama score when their quarterback's resting on the bench. You know, I mean, when they score on defense and special teams, you're not going to beat them.
No.
So let's try to play it close to the vest. Let's think first downs. Let's not think lighten up the scoreboard and get it to about 8-10 minutes with a touchdown game, one way or another. And let's see the pressure and the try to go to that Alabama sideline. Now, the only thing that's different this year for Alabama is not a lot of pressure in this game. You got to be honest. I mean, you know, if they win one out of the last two games, they're still going to be in the playoffs. I think they're going to look at this as a showcase game, and that could be trouble for Auburn.
Wasn't it 52-0 a couple years ago, I think?
Yeah, it's not going to be that bad.
Right,
it's going to be a better Auburn team. Their defense is at a much better level, but I could see this spreading out towards the end of the game.
Interesting times in Baton Rouge. Think that the I was just speaking to some contacts and on the radio in New Orleans, and the conversation around Louisiana is almost missing this Texas A&M game, which seems to me, again, an outsider just sitting here recording in North Carolina, this seems really, really big for both teams. This seems really big for both programs, especially in terms of how they go into the postseason the way that the season is remembered by the fan bases. Do you think that the Tigers, after not being able to punch it in, they had first and goal at the 7-yard line after not right. being able to punch it in against a banged up Florida defense. Do you think that this LSU team, possibly, maybe likely without Leonard Fournette, is going to be able to pull it together against a Texas A&M team that in its own right could really use a win in this game to give itself some juice moving forward?
You know, I really would think that the advantage of this game goes to Texas A&M.
Right.
However, you know, LSU, 5 trips inside the 10-yard line. They get a touchdown and a field goal. They botch a field goal. They fumble. And, of course, on the famous play at the end of the game, they go the wrong way and lose on downs in the game. You know, they just don't have it together on offense. I think A&M will show up for this game. I think this will be a really tough game for LSU. I think that they'll be anxious to play the game early. But I just wonder if that, you know, offense isn't clicking and it's not going well, how it might turn out. I know they want to do well for Ed Orgeron. They want to finish off well for their seniors and, you know, a group of juniors that probably be going on. But I just don't know what to think about this LSU team. They're hard to figure out. They seem to have so much talent, so many ways to get points on the board, but they find ways not to do it. They literally find ways not to do it. So all of the situations that's flying around right now, I mean, it could be the opposite. It could be Kevin Sumlin is sniffing at jobs that we don't even know about. So this is a really tough pick game for me. I would give a slight advantage to A&M. And we'll see what happens to Ed Orgeron. I'm sure, obviously, Jimbo Fisher is going to get the call first. But if he doesn't do it, I do know that Ed Orgeron, and I read it, he's told it to me personally, that he is promising an elite offensive coordinator. And I'm just wondering, and I mean, this would be great for my job. I'm not saying I want it, but this would be great for my job. His best friend in coaching is Lane Kiffin. Lane Kiffin has been publicly stated is a free agent. His contract's up at the end of this year. What if Ed Orgeron could walk in there and say, not only do I get an elite one, but I get Alabama's offensive coordinator if you hire me?
Oh, boy. And they would be back together. I mean, would that take Lane Kiffin putting his own ego aside after their history together at USC?
I think it's Lane Kiffin kind of playing to his ego that he wants to show that, you know, he wants to start doing interviews. He wants to tweet out. He. You know, when you coach at Alabama, you know, you don't hear much from Lane. I wonder if he wants to.
He misses
show
it.
What he could do. Almost. You remember when Nick went to Alabama and he came back and almost beat Alabama, almost beat LSU. I wonder if Lane Kiffin's just itching to do that.
Especially after being inside the belly of the beast. Yeah,
I tell you what, I'd like to do that game.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's.
I don't know what's going to happen, but I would enjoy doing it.
I don't know what's good for LSU Alabama, but that sounds very, very good for Gary Danielson and Chip Patterson. all right, well, what about Texas A&M? Now, I am guessing, and I'm sure there is a lot of technicality to this, I am guessing that Myles Garrett will be taking his talents to the next level.
Sure. Yeah.
And
he should. Come on, this is. You know, he's an elite player. He could have been playing in the NFL this year in circumstances and other sports. He'd already be a professional. He's played very well for his, you know, his chosen school. Been nicked all year this year. And, you know, I don't even know if he's going to be 100%. I don't know if he'll be 100% the rest of this year. I know Leonard Fournette knew he wouldn't be 100% the rest of the year. So, I'll miss watching those two guys play, but hopefully they can get healthy and get on to the next level and make some money.
So you've also got Trevor Knight. You also lose Josh Reynolds.
Right.
But you've still got John Chavis. You've still got Travion Williams, a very good back. And I just wonder, Gary, where do you see these next steps for this Texas A&M program? Because
it's a good question.
I'm not sure. I mean, I think that it's fascinating for the SEC West projecting forward. I think that's one of the biggest wild cards of the offseason.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, they're kind of betwixt in between. You know, they came into the league stressing, you know, fast football, no huddle, finesse, five wide receivers. It didn't mesh with this league. They didn't play complementary football. You know, what Missouri's going through right now, trying to go, they're producing a lot of yards, but they're not producing even close to a lot of wins. They're, you know, it's just not working. You need to work together, whatever that means.
Right.
Because quickly, you know, without anybody looking, the you know, besides Alabama, this league is beginning to look a lot like the Big 12, where we have a weekend in the Big 12 that is going to become kind of normal in the SEC. Think about the Big 12 last week. I don't know if anybody ever thought this could happen. This parlay would have won you a lot of money. Iowa State beats Texas Tech 66-10. Kansas beats Texas. Kansas State beats Baylor 42-21. And Oklahoma State beats TCU 31-6. That's a parlay a lot of people would not ever happen. And that's how these tempo offenses with not dependable and complementary defenses can make every game just a pick'em game.
Right, which for a football coach or a football-minded fan who is looking for consistency, doing your job on a regular basis, the erratic play that can come from that, I'm sure, is frustrating.
Yeah, I think there has to be some order. I really do. I think there has. If it's just a going and betting on a roulette wheel and who's going to win, we have no idea. It just depends. I don't think the average fan will continue to buy that.
Well, the as that is happening, you know, the Big Ten is having a great season, arguably
yes.
the best season in the Big Ten in a decade, and we go into a huge, interesting weekend that will decide who plays for the Big Ten championship. A pair of games in the Big Ten East: Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, Michigan State. It's in Columbus. It's in Happy Valley.
Right.
First, Ohio State, Michigan. Do you have a read on this game, or what are you going to be watching if you get a chance to watch this before the kickoff of the Iron Bowl?
I don't think there's any doubt that Ohio State has the advantage in this game. You know, it looks to me like Michigan's offense and their softer schedule has kind of caught up with them a little bit. They seem to struggle on offense. Ohio State does in many cases too, but when they put things together and get it going, you have the ways to score in a lot of different ways. And I don't know if Michigan has quite the same way to do that. So here's what I think is the untold story of coming into this Michigan-Ohio State game. Look at what happened to Louisville. I think the committee is going to have to take a second look at Ohio State because of the Louisville the belief that just a week ago at this time they were one of the two or three best teams in the country. And now they're going to look at this Big Ten conference and say, yeah, we know they're a shade better this year. But we look at them and say, well, you know, really, how much better are they? You know, I mean, Illinois can't beat Western Michigan. Northwestern lost to Illinois State. Iowa lost to North Dakota State. They have their chinks in their armor as well as everybody else. So now we have to decide, the word unequivocally, is a second-place non-champion Big Ten team going to leapfrog teams from other conferences? I think that's still up in the air. And I think if Ohio State doesn't make it, I think that and all hell will break loose. But I think if Washington wins out, Ohio State will not make the Final Four.
Because you're competing. If you do not win your conference championship, you are competing against the Pac-12 and the Big 12 champion, most likely.
Correct. And I'll tell you one other thing that's really popped up now. This loss, and I argued it, I hope it was with you, but on many, many shows, that the mistake in the Oklahoma State Central Michigan game was correctable. The end of that game, that was a miscall, a rule call. That game should have been awarded to Oklahoma State, and they'd be sitting there with one loss now. And look how much different it would be if Oklahoma State was the Big 12 champion with one loss, Washington was the big loss, the Pac-12 chance with one loss, and Ohio State was the non-Big Ten champion with one loss. I don't think they'd match up. I feel bad for Oklahoma State. It should have been changed when it happened, but I don't. I could be wrong. You know, I mean, I'm wrong a lot. But if Ohio State wins and Penn State wins, I think Ohio State better hope that Washington loses a game.
Yep. Which, who knows? I don't
That's for sure.
I saw a Utah team that I believed was, if nothing else, solid in the trenches this season lose to Cal and Oregon at the goal line. I don't know what to think of the Pac-12 in 2016.
It's a great point. I will say one of the best stories in all of college football this year has been Colorado.
Mm.
I did not know if that thing could be rebuilt. Mike McIntyre, I believe, should be the coach of the year in college football. That is a great rebuild, and I'm very proud of what he's done there. You know, my old coach Bill McCartney built that program once, and it's been very sad to watch where it went before.
Eight senior starters on that defense that have all played a lot, and they lost a lot of games, but they are winning games together. I'm with you. That is a great story in Boulder, no doubt. He is Gary Danielson. He will be on both the call for Arkansas and Missouri, that game kicking off at 2:30 Eastern time on Friday, and then the Iron Bowl from Tuscaloosa, Vern Lundquist, Gary Danielson, Allie LaForce, 3:30 Eastern time from Bryant-Denny Stadium. Gary, thank you so much for your time. We will look forward to catching up with you to preview Alabama-Florida in the SEC Championship game.
All right, thanks.